B3. Number 20A.
We come to point 4. The title is Two-Valued Logic in Christian Science. So we try to see what place value classical logic has in the Christian Science textbook. I guess we see that she takes the classical logic as the initial point of reasoning, that she begins with the concept of the classical logic. And I said the concept of classical logic, but not really with the content and the value and the valuing of the classical logic. She too speaks of opposites very often, of opposites, antitheses, of contraries. There's all kinds of terms to bring out opposites. The moment we have opposites, we really have the basis of classical logic. But because every concept, as long as we reason and use human language, can have an opposite. But in Christian Science, the opposites are counterfeits. They are counterfeits. She uses all kinds of terms to bring out those opposites, but always in the sense that they are actually not a real value, but they are always somehow something that is unlike the identities. Therefore, she speaks about the unlikeness. She speaks about deflection, simulation, antithesis, contradiction, solecism, falsities, false concept. These are terms which he uses in order to bring out that actually those opposites are only counterfeits and never a counterfact. This is new, because in the classical logic, the opposite pairs are both facts. Both are facts in the classical logic. Can you see already a difference? Though you have opposites, classical logic considers them as facts. In Christian Science, only one is a fact, and the other is a feat, a counterfeit, and not a counterfact. The term counterfact never appears in Mrs. Eddy's vocabulary. Though she had a big vocabulary, but counterfact was a term that she never uses. Why? And here is her reasoning about opposites. She says that truth is the fact, and error is not a counterfact, not a false fact, not even that. For her, it is a counterfeit. So, what is the conclusion from this? That Mrs. Eddy takes the basis of classical logic and makes that logic absolute. She gives absolute values in those to those opposites. She says the one is absolute, truth is an absolute value, error is no value. It is an illusion, a counterfeit, a negation, a nothingness, or whatever, a lie, whatever we can use as terms, but saying that they are not real. So we don't deal with a contradictory being. We deal here with one being, not with a contradictory, dualistic existence and being, but but actually only with one being. And so you can see in this way she builds the bridge from dualism to oneness, because she starts out with opposites, but by giving to one of the pair an absolute value, and therefore to the other one no value, we only have one value. Therefore, we would have to distinguish now somehow and say the logic that Mrs. Eddy uses as a basis is actually not the two-value logic, it is a two-concept logic. They are human concepts. We have seen that man created that dualistic logic. So we come to a conceptual logic, not a factual dualistic logic. There now we can see why Mrs. Eddy explains mortal mind as a solecism in language, a contradictory use of the language. Let's see how Mrs. Eddy uses therefore this two-valued logic, or two-conceptual logic. Her whole work is full of opposites. Sin, disease, and death are opposites of spirit. Matter and evil are opposites of science. She says the human mind in contradistinction to the divine mind, human opinions contradict the divine, and so on. Always these opposites, but she never gives to these opposites equal value. These opposites are not counterfacts, fact and counterfacts. They are strictly one-valued. Therefore, how on earth shall we then call her logic that she uses with opposites? They are not two values, they are two conceptions. And somehow we have to coin a new term. And we may be the first one who have to introduce a new terminology into logic. I think we would have, therefore, to call that presentation of opposites in the textbook a two-conceptional logic. I don't know which is better, a dual-conceptional logic or a two-concept logic or a two-conceptional logic. Not too good in now to coin terminology. Whatever I use now in this presentation, you know what I mean. the Greeks or classical logic has a two-valued logic, and Mrs. Eddy has a two-conceptional logic as a basis. Therefore, now we can also understand what we are considering at the beginning of this week, that you would say that we have to know error in order to understand truth, that we have to use the term death in order to define life, that we have to use the term error to define truth, and so on, that we have to use opposite concepts in order really to understand. Without that comprehension, we really would have diffuse thinking, mystical thinking. So the counterfeit, therefore, must always be understood very consciously as the value naught, as a value nothing, the counterfeit. Has that value of nothingness. So the nothingness of nothing, she says, must be understood. She says the nothingness of nothing is plain, there is no discussion about that, but it must be understood, and it can only be understood by the fact that truth is absolute, is the only value. Therefore, one can see why when she speaks about the counterfeit, that she very often, not always, but very often stresses that counterfeit with so-called power, so-called law. Always it's a so-called, in order to bring out, it's not the value, it's called that way, through a conceptual value, it's called that way, but it isn't that way. She would use that so-called or suppositional lie, supposititious also, the supposititious opposite, always to bring out and to stress that opposite is not the fact, is not the value. We only believe that it is a value, but actually it is not a value. Now you can see that this brings us to another point, namely, how do we know that the one of the two is not a value and the other is a value? What is that which decides the evaluation of the two? And so we come to understanding. You see, the only understanding decides now which one of the two is a reality and which one is a unreality, which one is a somethingness and which one is a nothingness. So we need understanding. And now we can see how Mrs. Eddy says that understanding is the line of demarcation between spirit and matter. Therefore, can you see what happened? That she shows, therefore, understanding is, so to say, the introduction of a third value, if we may say so. We have now to be very careful that language becomes inadequate to express what we want to express, because language is dualistic, and we have to see something monistic. So we cannot take every word exactly, but you have now to listen to the inner logic of it and see, oh, then we have, so to say, a third value, understanding, and that understanding is of a higher hierarchy than the two valued or the two conceptional logic. It is as if we had on one level fact and counterfeit, and asking what decides that this is fact and this is counterfeit. It's something higher than the two concepts, must be a higher level understanding that says this is fact and this is counterfeit. So we appeal to a higher authority and ask, there must be another value. And so we could see that understanding is the third value which we introduce in order to bring light into the two conceptual logic. It's understanding which makes the two conceptual logic possible. So we have quite a step here. We can see that actually that third value introduces us to the one valued logic. Because that third value, understanding, says to the pair of opposites, you are the fact, and the other is not the fact. And if it only has, therefore, one value, an absolute value, therefore understanding gives us a one-valued logic. So we have to see how flexible these things are, and that they are evolutive. This logic is an evolutive logic. It's not the stagnant logic. We see that we start out first with the classical logic, introducing opposites. Once we have introduced opposites, we begin to introduce conceptual logic and say there are not opposite values. One is a fact, the other is a counterfeit. Then we are led further in the evolution and say, what tells us what is fact, what is counterfeit? And it says, understanding as a quality of God decides what is fact, what is counterfeit. That understanding naturally is the understanding of the seven synonymous terms through their ideas. They are the third value defining to us which of the two concepts is a fact and which is an illusion. So that finally, actually, we have only one-valued logic with a two-conceptual basis. Can you see that we get many logics woven into each other, which naturally leads us already somehow to a dimensional logic, a logic of a higher order and a logic of a lower order, but still necessary both in order to understand reality. So, can you see now that the two-valued logic as a classical logic is a starting point and is necessary, and we shouldn't just throw it overboard and make just tabula rasa, but that we see that we must handle it rightly. We should not discard it, we should handle it rightly, give it the right place, and then it serves for our study and for learning. We come to a fifth point. The title is The Duality of Jesus. I take up this fifth point as an illustration of what we have been seeing up to now. In Science and Health 334, there is a marginal heading, The Son's Duality. The Son's Duality. We can see right away this textbook takes duality as a way of reasoning, therefore accepts the dualistic thinking as a way of reasoning, though it does not end there. So I read you that passage, and as I read it, we will consider it from the point of view of logic. She says, the invisible Christ was imperceptible to the so-called personal senses, whereas Jesus appeared as a bodily existence. This is the dualistic sense of Jesus Christ. That here we have an identity called Jesus Christ, but that identity apparently has a dualistic concept. It is visible and invisible. Both. Can you see that our laws, the Aristotelian laws, are broken? That A is not always A. The law of identity is broken. The law of non-contradiction is broken. This dual personality of the unseen and the seen. Can you see the opposite pair? Seen, unseen. Visible, invisible. All about the same identity. It is therefore something, and at the same time something else. It's not always the same thing. This dual personality of the seen and unseen, the spiritual and the material, is at the same time both. It breaks Aristotelian logic. The eternal Christ on one side and the corporeal Jesus on the other side, manifest in the flesh, continued until the Master's ascension. And then it disappeared. When the human material concept of Jesus disappeared, while the spiritual self or Christ continues to exist in the eternal order of divine science. Isn't it terrific? You see, just what I have shown you, huh? You start out with duality, the seen and the unseen, the material and the spiritual, the eternal and the temporal. They go along together as one. So, how long? Not always. Only until ascension. Well, ascension, therefore, here means spiritual understanding. So the moment we go to a higher order, and she speaks here, exists in the eternal order of divine science, the moment we go to a higher order, to ascension, suddenly that dual identity loses its dual identity. Again, it breaks the classical law. Breaks the classical law. And suddenly, that duality is a oneness. He didn't say, Christ ascended and he left down there a body and you could bury it and there is a part of that Christ Jesus. You see, it's still one identity. It's not the Christ plus a Jesus. It's not Christ plus a Jesus. It's Christ Jesus as one identity, but having two values in itself. As long as one doesn't see the truth about that Christ Jesus. The moment that one began to see the truth about the Christ Jesus, the Christ what was seen as the only value and eternal value, and Jesus was seen as no value, that's ascension, and so you have only a one-valued sense about it. That's an example. Terrific example. That clear? Can you see, when you take this and look over your three laws of Aristotle, then you can see that those laws are being broken. They are not usable for Christian science. So, again here, it's interesting to see that it starts with dualism, the Son's duality. It starts with dualism, but it resolves dualism through a certain logic, namely that dimensional logic where you go and have a higher level of logic and introduce a higher level of logic in order to resolve the lower order of logic. And then you have ascension, and then Christ Jesus is no more seen, now he is unseen. He exists forever in the eternal order. He is no more corporeally here. It is resolved. Therefore, one can understand what she says about Jesus, that she always said that Jesus understood really the nothingness of matter, or he wouldn't have been able to ascend. He understood what? That one value of the opposite is nothing and the other all. And that enabled him to ascend. She says that Jesus therefore spoke of matter and spirit as opposites. Jesus was the highest human concept of the perfect man. Can you see? He was a concept. He was not reality. It was the highest human concept, but not reality. She says Jesus was inseparable from Christ. He is inseparable from Christ. Then Christ Jesus is one identity. There are not two. There is not a sense there is a Jesus and there is a Christ. There is an identity called, one identity called Jesus Christ. And as long as we look at Jesus Christ from the highest human concept, then he is a man. And the moment you look at this identity, Jesus Christ, from the point of view of Christ, then he exists unseen in the order of eternality. He is something else. So something is not just that something. Something A is A and not A. It breaks that law of non-contradiction and of the excluded middle. Just go back when you think during the next year and study the textbook, go back to just these three laws and always try to see how far the textbook actually would substantiate these laws and how far it does not. And you will see when you look deeply into it that it does never actually substantiate the classical logic. So it goes out from there. So Jesus was inseparable from Christ, was one identity, the divine idea outside of the flesh. Yes. So this was one example. Let's go to